Hey friends, Lexi Maynard here, and you're listening to Words of the Wise podcast. Today's episode is a little different. It was originally recorded in February of 2024 as a private conversation. I don't know if you know this as a listener, but you are able to schedule an interview with me and ask that it not be publicized, but just be kept as a memento for your family. So that's something I do. But anyway, that is what this episode originally was, but after some prayer, reflection, and a little nudge from me, Kathy Campbell graciously agreed to share it publicly, believing her story might encourage someone else. This episode holds the kind of wisdom that only comes through walking closely with the Lord through loss, love, and legacy. I am so honored to share it with you now. Here it is, episode 40.
Hello, my name is Kathy Campbell, and I am 79 years old. I will be 80 in March.
Oh, happy early birthday. Yeah. And you've aged so great. So let's talk about your childhood first. Okay. Where are you from? Where did you grow up?
Okay, I'm from Indianapolis.
Okay.
And I've lived here all my life, other than 5 years when I lived in Rochester, Indiana on a lake.
Oh, nice.
With my family. My brother was hit by a car when we lived here in Indianapolis, and my dad was a traveling salesman, so he would said, you know, we just need to get
out of here.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he almost died. He was taking me across the street, and a car hit him, and matter of fact, the guy that hit him had a heart attack and almost died.
Oh, my goodness.
But anyway, so we lived in Rochester, Indiana for 5 years on a lake, and it was probably the best 5 years of my childhood.
Really?
Yeah.
And how old were you when
you
were there?
Well, when that happened with David and David was probably maybe 6 and I was probably 4.
Okay. So you're 6 to 11, you were living on the lake.
Yes.
Makes a setting for a fun childhood.
Yeah, yeah. It was fun.
Yeah. And what were your parents like?
They were awesome. Mm-hmm. They were, they just loved well. They loved all of us kids really well, and my mother was a very gentle woman, loved to laugh. She taught us all how to laugh mm-hmm. and enjoy life. My dad was a hoot. I was the apple of his eye.
You were?
Yeah, because I have 3 brothers.
Okay, then yes, you definitely were.
And I'm the only girl, so they were awesome. They were great parents.
Aww. And what did the typical day in your childhood look like? Maybe you can do one when you were living on the lake and then another when you moved back to Indianapolis.
Okay. Probably living on the lake, we did, especially in the wintertime, we kids were always outside, mm-hmm. you know, playing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like today.
Yeah.
You know, it just isn't.
I wish it was still like that.
Yeah. So we were always out. So we would play all kind of games on the ice at the lake. In the summertime, we would boat. And we had rabbits, we had chickens, we had all kinds of stuff. It was kind of we kind of lived in a farm area, but yet we were on the lake.
Uh-huh.
But there were farms all around us. So it was just a good old time.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah, it was.
So then when you moved back to Indianapolis.
When I moved back to Indianapolis, our typical day was, again, getting up, having breakfast as a family, and us kids just heading outside to play kick the can or mm-hmm. tag or whatever, and we were very active at Tabernacle Presbyterian Church Sports Center.
Okay.
And we all played baseball, we all played basketball. You know, we lived a lot there.
Uh-huh.
You know, because it was just, you know, life was so different back then.
Yeah.
You know, and my mom and dad, we'd always know when mom and dad, when it was dinner time, she would ring a bell. You know, and we could hear it all over the neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
We were all close with our neighbors, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, we knew our neighbors.
Yeah.
You know, where you sometimes don't know so much about your neighbors now.
Yeah, exactly. So wait, where did you go to school?
I went to Shortridge High School.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you had 3 brothers, like you said.
Uh-huh.
Where did you fall in that order?
Okay, Steve is the oldest, and then David, and then me, and then Jimmy.
Okay, cool.
So yeah.
Mental.
And they were my protectors. They, you know, I was a tomboy because of my brothers.
Mm-hmm.
They would let me play with the guys, you know. Mm-hmm. I got along so much better with guys than I did girls.
Yeah.
You know, when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I was always, you know, playing tag with them or football with them or whatever.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a funny story. my brothers, I would arm wrestle people, you know. Yeah. I was very strong.
Yeah.
So they would have their friends come over and they would say, hey, I bet my sister can beat you in arm wrestling. And they said, oh, no, she can't. Yeah, I'll bet you 5 cents she can. And so I would beat all their friends.
Yeah.
And so then I realized they're taking all this money, which wasn't much, and I'm not getting any of it.
And I'm just...
I said, I'm not doing this anymore, guys.
That's hilarious. Do you have like a favorite childhood memory?
Let me think. Probably the lake would be my favorite, you know, just because it was so freeing to be on the lake. And,
yeah.
And I love, you know, I love being on lake. I mean, my kids had lake properties. Bob and I had lake properties. My parents had, you know, it's a wholesome, good time to be on the lake.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And it, you know, it was just my brothers and I. So you become very close with your family. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very family atmosphere being on a lake.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I like.
Mm-hmm. So. For sure. Did you have a job when you were growing up?
Well, I babysat. And then when I was in high school, I worked for Blocks. It's a department store.
Okay.
You probably know. You know what Ayers is?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, well, it was compared to Ayers. It was Blocks were the two big department stores when I was growing up.
Oh, fun. And so in high school age, probably?
Yeah, high school age, I did that.
Did you like that job?
Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah.
I remember I worked, when I first started, they put me in the candy area where they sold candy, you know, like chocolates and stuff. And my first day, some guy came and asked for candy, and I bagged it up for him and waited, and he shortchanged me. He told me he gave me a 10, and he said, "No, I gave you a 20." I said, "No, you didn't. You gave me a 10. No, you didn't." And I just started crying. because it was my first day, and I thought, "Oh my god,
what if I got myself?
What if I got myself?" So then I called my manager over, and she said, "Well, we'll send you the extra 10 if the drawer doesn't match up tonight," which it did, because he didn't give me that.
Yeah.
So, but...
What a terrible first day.
It was horrible. I thought, I don't want to work here anymore.
Yeah.
They moved me to a different department.
That's hilarious. So then also in high school, what did, like, the typical Saturday night look like?
Well, usually we just got together with friends, you know. My boyfriend, Bob, he was a senior when I was a freshman.
Okay.
Well, he was a 5-year senior when I was a freshman. And so he was out on the road. He joined Stan Kenton's orchestra, which was one of the big bands back in those days.
Oh, cool.
And so he was out on the road almost the whole time I was in high school. So I just ran with my friends. We just had a group of guys and girls that we all ran together on Saturday night. We'd go to the Rendezvous and down by Butler.
Yeah.
I don't think it's there anymore. It may be.
I don't
know. It was a hangout, the teepee, which was over by the fairgrounds.
Okay.
We hang out there, you know.
Uh-huh.
So that was typical. You
yeah.
know, we'd have summer parties, you know. But it was basically with friends.
Okay. As we have kind of been talking about your childhood and earlier years, we're going to talk about your parents again. What would you say is the greatest thing that they taught you?
Well, that family was very important, and that you know, they're your family is your blood, and they're very important, and they will always have your back, and it's proven to be very true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, so they taught us to, you know, they taught us to be kind, and you know, they were good examples.
Yes,
of what to be like.
Mm-hmm. That's great, and I'm actually going to jump to, since you mentioned that you met Bob in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you two meet in high school?
Well, this is a long story. When I was in the eighth grade, after we graduated out of eighth grade, we went to a junior vaudeville that Shortridge was putting on, and Bob was in the pit band.
Okay.
And I didn't know him from Adam.
Yeah.
But my three of my best friends, we were sitting in the front row, and I just kept looking at this guy, and he would look over at me, and I thought, oh my gosh, he is so cute. And I thought, well, if he is still at Shortridge when I get there next year, I'm going to date him. I just knew I was going to date him. So when I got to Shortridge, then I realized that he was a senior. He was a senior, but he did not, he had to go another extra year because he was constantly cutting school to be, and to
band
play
stuff.
Bands.
Oh, okay.
And although he was, his last senior year, he had straight A's all the way through, so it wasn't that he wasn't smart.
Yeah.
It's just that he was always cutting school with all his friends.
Yeah.
Anyway, so when I got to school, I remember walking down the aisle of one of the hallways at church, and I saw him coming. I thought, oh my gosh, he is still here.
Oh.
And he walked past me. He says, well, hello, Kathy. And I thought, how does he know my name? I was just so shocked. And I was a freshman cheerleader, and I was the cheerleader all the way through school. But I never did find out how he knew my name. So about 2 weeks later, I get a call from him, and he asked me, he said, hey, would you like to go out for get a Coke or something? I said, sure. So, and I thought, I wonder if my parents are going to let me do this. Freshman, he was a senior. But they trusted me, and they said, well, you know, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
So we went out, and so we did that almost 7 times in a row. And on my 7th date with him, he kissed me. And I went in, and I said to my mom that I just kissed the man I'm going to marry.
Oh, you did?
And she said, Kathy, come on. And I said, no, really, I just kissed the man I'm going to marry.
Oh, and sure enough, you did.
And sure enough, I did.
Yeah, wow. Oh, my goodness. So then he was off traveling, obviously.
He was off traveling with Stan Kenton's orchestra, which was one of the bigger bands back in those days, in the 40s, mm-hmm. 50s, 60s, 70s. He was like Count Basie, Stan Kenton, Ralph Martiri, all those big bands.
Yeah.
So
how was long distance then?
Well, it was hard. Well, first of all, he went to North Texas State University for 3 years before he went out. So when I was in high school, 3 of those years, he was in college.
Oh, okay.
And then Stan called him and asked him if he would like to join the band. So he gave up his senior year at college and went out on the road with Stan. So when he was in college, he would come back like for Christmas and, you know, the holidays and stuff. But we just had I dated other guys, but everybody knew that I
you were going to end up with Bob.
That I was in love with Bob. I had a lot of guy friends.
Yes. Yeah.
You know. Some of them that wanted to be more than that.
Yeah.
Like, no.
I have Bob.
Yeah, I have Bob. And I'm sure he had some dates when he was in school too, so.
Yeah, okay. Makes sense.
It was just a growing period for us.
Yeah. So then did you go to college?
No, I did not.
Okay.
And, you know, people say, well, why didn't you go to college? And and my answer to that, and this is the honest to God truth, I wanted to be a wife, a mother, and I wanted to have a family.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be like my mom and dad. Yeah. I wanted to have a good family that was loved well and cared for.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had no desire to go. And I wasn't good at school. I was dyslexic, and I just wasn't good in school. I didn't like school. Yeah. I liked the social part of it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it does.
Yeah. But school, I just didn't care for school that much.
Yeah.
I wish I did, but I didn't.
No. And that's respectable, too.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. All the women in my family are actually stay-at-home moms.
Are they?
Yeah.
And I love being a stay-at-home mom.
Uh-huh.
Matter of fact, I got so many, I was very active at my church, and I would have people say to me, they would say, hey, would you like to do it, you know, would you teach a Bible study, or would you do this? And I said, you know, my ministry right now is in my home. And there'll come a time when I can do all that. But my kids, my ministry now is in my home.
Yeah.
You know, so we will have them at church and we'll have them at, you know, youth groups and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to take myself away from them when they are home.
Yeah.
And I got some flack about that.
Yeah.
For a while. But you know, God has just really showed me that the fruits of those labors that I stayed home paid off.
Yeah. Well, and another individual in a podcast that I've done, he said that that's what's wrong with the world today is like people are staying away from the family. And not to say, but he basically was saying that the best way to impact the world is to have an impact on your children.
Yes.
And then, because they're the ones that are going to be.
They're the next generation.
Yeah. Yeah. So I admire that. I understand that. So did you ever work?
Yes, I worked for, after when Kelly got to be a sophomore in college, I worked for 11 years at Stationers in Broderpo. It was a office supply gift store. And I worked, I managed that store for 11 years.
Okay.
Just to help out financially for Kelly.
Yeah.
You know, at school.
Okay. But you didn't, after high school, get a job or?
No.
Okay. So then you got married then.
Then I got married.
Okay. So yeah, let's talk about that. So how did you, I know you said that you knew after you kissed him that that was the man you were going to marry.
I just knew it.
You just had a feeling?
Yeah. I just knew. It was almost like God said, this is who you're going to marry.
Yeah. Yeah.
I said, okay, I'll take
They say when you know, you know. It's like, all right. So then how
we
did...
Very, I will say, Bob and I were very physically attracted to each other. He was very charismatic to me. And I just fell in love with him very easily.
Yeah. What was it? What else about him, like his character...
Well, you know, he was, he came from a very dysfunctional home.
Okay.
But yet he, I mean, when we got married, my family became his family. He loved my, he loved his parents. I'm not saying that he didn't. But it was, there was a lot of mental illness in Bob's family. And him and his mother did not get along because she was, just drove him crazy. They couldn't be in the same room with each other.
Oh, man.
But... they were good grandparents. I will say that to our kids. He learned how to really love people through my parents by being in our family. He was funny. He had great humor. He just was a neat guy. He did suffer from depression, from seasonal depression. So he developed seasonal depression, and those were hard times. It usually happened in the winter time when it was, you know, Indiana is so cloudy and so dark.
It is depressing.
Yeah, so we would go to Florida a lot, much as we could during those times when we'd take the kids, or we'd have my parents come over and stay with the kids. We'd go for a week or two just to get in the sun for him. That was hard.
Yeah.
You know, that was hard on our marriage when he was... And then he was an alcoholic for a few years.
Okay.
And that was from being on the Kenton Band. You know, when you're on the road, it's all you do is you play all night, then you get on the bus, drive to the next town, and you're drinking.
And partying.
So that's really what brought me... I accepted Christ in when I was 12 years old. At Tabernacle Presbyterian at a retreat I was at, that all of us kids went to. But I didn't make the Lord of my life until at the end of Bob's alcoholism, when I said, you know, I can't do this. And we separated for 2 weeks, and at the end of that 2 weeks, he realized he was losing his family. He was a very family man.
Yeah.
And he signed himself into Fairbanks Hospital, had an encounter with the Lord there, and never took another drink. God literally delivered him from alcoholism.
Wow.
It was awesome.
How old were you at that time?
I was 26.
Okay.
And so he was four years older than I.
Yeah, so you had been 30.
Yeah.
Wow, what a story.
Yeah. So it was definitely a God thing, how God gave him a vision of who he could be in Christ. The Lord just said, you have two choices here. You can either choose me or you're going to be a dead man.
Yeah.
And so that was, you know, Bob and I, from then on, and Bob and I, we could praise the Lord for his alcoholism because it brought us both to a encounter of personal relationship with Christ and making him the Lord of our lives.
Yeah.
And he turned our family, you know, 100 degrees
around. It made God the center of your marriage.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I fell in love with him all over again, a totally different kind of love. And, but it was awesome.
Yeah. So when you two did get married, did you have, like, if, I know you said you accepted Christ in your life when you were 12. Did he have a relationship?
He did not have a relationship.
Okay.
So when we got married, basically what happened was we got married and I took God off the throne and put Bob on it.
Okay. Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, that, and I feel like that happens a lot.
Yeah.
With marriages.
And, yeah. And then, and so the Lord said, well, we'll see about that. So the alcoholism came into play, you know, and it was only for about 5 years that there was a drinking problem. But it came into play and it brought us, you know, it gave me, okay, I'm taking him off the throne. And
yeah,
like
God
back on
it. Yeah.
So.
Okay.
You know, God's ways are not our ways, that's for sure.
No. And he is, I feel like he is a jealous God.
Well, he is.
He is. Yeah. So then, did you get married immediately after you graduated high school?
Yes.
Okay. And what was your wedding like?
I had four attendants and he had four. As a matter of fact, the drummer on the Kenton band was our best man, John Von Olin, and which he was a really funny guy, but he was a phenomenal drummer. But anyway, we got married at Tabernacle Presbyterian Church,
mm-hmm.
and it was a fairly big wedding. I mean, it wasn't huge like they are today, but it was, you know, the chapel was full.
Yeah.
And we went. We didn't have to take a honeymoon then because he had come off the road and so he had to get a job. So
yeah,
he took a job with the Omore Man. Have you ever heard of Omore Man?
No.
It's a bread company.
Okay.
They had a commercial and they would whistle, go, woohoo, here comes the Omore Man. So the next day he had to be up the next morning to go to work.
Yeah.
So we lived in a little apartment. We rented a little apartment downtown right behind the library downtown.
Yeah.
And we had, it was a one-bedroom apartment where the bed pulled out of the wall.
Oh, yeah.
And to get to the bathroom, you had to climb over the bed if it was down. We also had a monkey.
Really?
Yes. My mother worked at the pet store for years, and they were selling monkeys one time, so we bought one, and it was a little Risa monkey. It was so cute. I made little pants for it.
Oh, that's hilarious. What was the name?
Chico.
Chico. Okay.
Yeah, and we had to smuggle it up on that freight elevator because we weren't allowed to have any pets, you know, in this apartment.
That's hilarious.
Anyways, that kind of went off subject.
No, that's great. I love it. So how long did you live there? Like, you can kind of go through the various houses you lived in.
Yeah. We went from there. We went to, let's see. Where did we go from there? From there, we went to Tanglewood. No, we went to on Ralston.
Okay.
Over by, in Broadacre, yeah. Ralston. And then from Ralston, we lived there for quite some time. When Mike was born there. And Mark was born there. Was Kelly born there? And Kelly was born there. No, Kelly was born at our next location.
Okay.
So the ages of my kids, Mike is the oldest, and then 2 years later, Mark was born.
Okay.
And then 7 years later, Kelly was born.
Okay.
So the boys, both the boys were born when we lived in Ralston.
Okay.
And then from Ralston, we went to, we went to 62nd and Alleyne,
uh-huh.
right across from John Strange School.
Okay.
We lived there for a while. And then from there, we went to Tanglewood.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tanglewood to, Tanglewood, we went to Bud Run Drive, which is right across from East 91st Street.
Okay.
And the reason why we did that, mainly, Bob had stopped drinking and by then, and that's probably the house. In Tanglewood was the house where he drank, where he got
yeah.
in trouble with his drinking. And so when he found sobriety, we built a home across from 91st Street because we were going to 91st Street Church.
Yeah.
Well, we started at 49th Street, but we ended up at 91st Street, which is, they moved from
locations.
49th to 91st.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was the last house. That's where Bob died, in that home. So,
and how old was he when he passed away?
I was 52 and he was 56.
Oh, so
yeah.
What happened?
He had the last 9 months of Bob's life. He had a bipolar incident. His blood work was totally messed up. And this is a very sad story. He he thought somebody was trying to kill him. He had a scenario. It was so hard. It was so frustrating for 9 months trying to get him to realize that what he thought was not true.
Yeah.
He would not take medicine because he thought that's how somebody was going to kill him.
Like paranoia.
Yeah. Yeah. Mental illness is so devastating. And especially paranoia, because you can't, they believe, like the psychiatrist, he believes what he's saying. This is his reality.
Yeah.
And I said, and Bob and I would be on our knees almost 9 months praying for God to deliver him from the pain in his head. He was in a lot of pain, mental pain.
Yeah.
And he ended up taking his life.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Mm-hmm. It was devastating.
Yeah.
To all of us. Because he hadn't talked about that. Thought that the Lord was going to heal him.
Mm-hmm.
We thought that. I remember the night before he died. I was holding him in bed. I could feel him shaking on the inside, but you couldn't see it on the outside.
Yeah.
And I just kept praying over him, and it was just so pain. Oh. He was in so much pain, and he said that it was Sunday morning. When we woke up, he said, "Do you mind if we don't go to church this morning?" And I said, "No, we've been up all night. We don't need to do that. Stay in bed." And I got up and went in and got in the shower though, and to get dressed. Mark and Karen were at the house. Mark was at he was with Family Life, and he was downtown at a conference for Family Life, and Karen was going to go down and meet him.
Yeah.
And so we were taking care of David and Katie.
Okay.
And Aaron.
Your grandkids?
Yeah, my grandkids.
Yeah.
And so I came out of the shower and he wasn't in bed. And I went downstairs and I said, "Karen, did you see Bob?" And he said, "Yeah, I think he went out in the garage." So I went out in the garage. He was, and I thought, "I bet he's out raking leaves." Our yard was I went out. It was kind of misty, raining, dark out, and I went out. The back door was open, and I went out, and the dog next door was barking, and I'd never heard that dog bark like that before. And I thought, so I looked out to see if he was in the backyard, and he wasn't. Came back in. I said, "Well, he must have gone back upstairs." So I went back upstairs looking for him. He wasn't there. Came back down, and I thought, and it was just like the Lord said, "You need to go out in the garage." So I went out in the garage, and my car was here, his paint wagon. He was a paint contractor. He worked for NF City Fire Department for 20 years.
Okay.
And then he did painting on the side, and then he went full-time painting.
Okay.
Because it was very good money for us. So
yeah.
My car was here, his car was there, and I looked through my window of my car, his paint wagon window was up, which was very unusual because he would never leave it up. So I walked around the back of the car, and I looked down the side, and it looked like, this is all I can remember. I don't remember.
Yeah, you probably blacked it out. Yeah.
I remember that I saw something on the floor, but I thought it was his fire coat because we had a fire coat hanging where he would hang. And so the next thing I knew, I was inside the house saying, "I think we need to call 911. I think Bob has done something." And so Karen called 911. They called over to church and told all the Crawls to come home. And 911 came, and he had taken his life.
Yeah.
And I thought, it was so funny because I thought, oh my gosh, maybe he was telling me the truth. Someone was trying to kill him. All kind of things go through your head.
Yeah.
Maybe he was telling me. Well, then the kids found a note and it just said, "Kathy, I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. I can't stand the pain any longer." And so I know without a shadow of a doubt that God was there and caught him.
Yeah.
And took him home and gave him peace.
Yeah.
Because he was.
It was like.
Yeah. And God was another thing about that. God was so good a year prior to that. we took all of our kids on a cruise.
Mm-hmm.
And they wrote a tribute to Bob and I, telling them how much they loved us, what they had shown us, you know, as I'm growing up.
Yeah.
And I know that was a God moment.
Yeah.
Because they have no regrets.
No. They know that their dad knew.
Yeah. Yeah. They know that their dad, they know that Bob knew that they loved him and that they respected him and they loved him. And so, and I think how gracious it is that God gave them that grace.
Yeah.
Not to have
any sort of like regret or second guessing
regret.
Yeah. Wow.
And so, I lost about 4 months of my life afterwards. I was going to ask,
how did you?
I couldn't do anything. But that's where my church came in. My family came in. It was like, they literally held me up, held my arms. They did my praying for me.
Yeah.
You know, I just really couldn't do anything. And, but, you know, God is good, and he's shown me that his ways are not my way. My joy comes in knowing that I will see Bob again.
Yeah.
Because he's in heaven, and that's where I'll be.
Yeah.
And so, same with Jim. You know, I mean, I've had a lot of loss.
Yeah.
And anyway, but that's kind of my story with Bob.
Yeah. Well, so you and Bob were together then for
34 years.
Mm-hmm. So then I guess while we're staying on the marriage, so then how did you then meet Jim?
I met Jim and I, Jim, Bob and Jim were friends.
Okay.
In high school. Yeah. I did not like Jim when he was, this was before Christ, before he knew Christ.
Yeah.
He was very cocky, very know-it-all.
Yeah.
You know, I thought, oh my gosh.
He's a lot.
And so one day we were in church and Jim and Jill, his wife, walked into church and Bob said, oh my gosh, there's Jim Campbell. We hadn't seen him for years.
Yeah.
Oh, there's Jim Campbell. Wonder what he's doing here. I said, probably the same reason you're here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we were all in Sunday school class together.
Yeah.
And I did Bible study with his wife. You uh-huh. know, we were. So he lost his wife 6 months after I lost Bob.
Okay.
To cancer.
Yeah.
And so we basically were grieving together through Sunday school class and through just being friends. You know, I'd come to really, you know, respect him and like him. He was a changed man.
Yes, yeah.
And so I had moved out of the house where Bob and I lived and bought a home across from Kelly and Tony, mm-hmm. my daughter and her husband. And I was going to do a garage sale of some stuff that I still had at my house. And so I asked Jim, he was an elder at our church, I said, could you get me some tables?
Yeah.
To use from the church. He said, sure, I'll be glad to. So he brought over some tables, and I did a garage sale and sold a bunch of stuff. And so when he came to pick them up, he came in, he said, and we just got talking and just kind of sharing stuff. And he said, hey, would you like to go to dinner? And I said, well, sure. And so he said, well, I'll pick you up around 7. I said, okay. So when he left, I thought, wait a minute.
He just asked me on a date.
He doesn't think this is a date.
Yeah.
You know, because I am not ready to date anybody. Surely he doesn't. So I called him up and I said, hey, Jim, I don't want you to think this is a date because it's not. I will meet you wherever you want to have dinner. So I met him. You know, and he thought, and it was so funny because he says, oh, okay.
Yeah, because he was thinking it was a date.
He was thinking it was a date. So we went to the dinner and it was a very nice place and it was very hard for me, though. It just was hard for me. You know, Jim and Jill, when Jill, they had months before she died I want you to go. I want you to
prepare a little bit.
You know, I want you to find somebody. You're young still. I want you to find. Well, Bob and I didn't have that.
Yeah.
And so I felt very, very like I was cheating on Bob.
Yeah.
And so after that date, I think we had a few more. And then I went to Austria for 3 months to be with Mike and Patty and my three grandkids over there.
Okay.
Mike was vice president of TCM.
Oh, awesome.
In Austria. So I went over to be there. Well, he asked me, he said, can I write you while you're over there? And I said, sure. So he wrote me every day I was there. And through those 3 months, through those letters, we fell in love with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And distance makes the heart grow.
Yeah, and I thought, God, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And so he says, so Jim says to me, he says, hey, can I court you? And I said, when you get home, can I court you? And I said, well, yes. He said, yeah, you know what courting means, don't you? And I said, dating? And he says, well, no, it means that we're going to see if God is going to bring us into a marriage. Well, that just freaked me out.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's like, what?
And I said, oh, well, I guess. I don't know. I was just taken back by it. And so he called all my kids and he called his kids and said, I want to court Kathy when she gets back from Austria. And they gave their blessing. They liked Jim. We all grew up together.
Yeah.
His kids, yeah. My kids, we all grew up together.
Yeah.
So we knew yeah. each other very well. So it was a very easy transition.
Uh-huh.
So I got home, and so we dated for probably a year.
Yeah.
And because of her age, he asked me to marry him. And I said, if he would die before I will, I'll marry you. I said, I don't want to bury another husband. He said, Kathy, I'm not God. I can't do that. Yeah. I can't tell you that I'm going to die before you. But that's just where I was.
Yeah.
I was just,
well,
you know. And
still was pretty fresh. Like,
yeah. So so finally I said yes. So we got married, and it was just he was such a blessing. Uh-huh. He loved me very, very well.
Yeah.
He loved my kids very, very well. And they basically, because there was only four kids when Bob died.
Yeah.
Let's see, there was, four kids. There was David, Aaron, and Katie, and little Mark, Mike's oldest.
Yeah.
And he had just been born not too long ago when Bob died. And so basically, I've got 14 grandkids. So basically, Jim became their grandparent.
Yeah.
And he loved them well. He said, what do you want our marriage to be about? And I said, this is what I want our marriage to be about. If we're going to get married, then I want to leave a legacy of what a good marriage looks like and what it looks like to walk with the Lord.
Yeah.
And, you know, and good times and bad times and suffering and not, and enjoy. So I said, okay, that's what we'll do. And that's exactly what we did.
Yeah.
And my grandkids loved him. Jim was very wise. He was an encourager to my grandkids. He was encouraged to all of us.
Yeah.
He was just, you know, he was, I mean, I really feel that it was definitely orchestrated by God.
Yeah.
That I married Jim.
He was a light.
Yeah. And, you know, and he loved me well. He's missed, well, they both are, but Jim is missed really deeply.
Uh-huh.
Because that was my last 20 years.
Yeah.
This was Jim. And so, anyway, that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah. Yeah. So after two marriages,
mm-hmm.
What would you say is the key to a successful marriage?
Communication.
Okay.
Communication and grace. Giving each other grace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's learning to know that my always thought is I wanted to think more of my husband than of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very scripturally backed. And I think if marriage people could learn to care for the other person more than themselves, it really works.
Yeah.
But the main thing is communication.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you're having a fight, you know, like I was a slow processor in the fight. Jim wanted to, you know, he wanted to discuss it right away.
Yeah.
And I said, you need to give me an hour.
Yeah.
You know, so it's communicating, knowing, you know, when you can resolve conflict, resolve problems, or I just think, you know, Jim and I did premarital counseling to a lot of engaged couples.
Yeah.
And that was the one thing that we taught them is that you've got to communicate, mm-hmm. communicate.
Yeah.
Because that's what, then you don't get yourself in trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, the one thing my mom and dad taught me was this is what I taught my kids, it's easier to tell the truth than it is to lie.
Yeah.
Because your sins will find you out.
Yeah. And then you get.
Yeah. And then communication sometimes in that scenario it's not, it you drop it. You don't just, you know, so you don't, so it's, there's more stuff building up before you come back and discuss it.
Yeah.
And resolve it.
Yeah.
So, tell you a story about me telling Kelly, this is a cute story. The one thing I always say, you know, it's easier to tell the truth than it is to lie.
Yeah.
So I just want you kids to know that your sins will find you out.
Yeah.
I think, and that's God's grace.
Yeah.
They find you out.
Yeah.
You don't want to wallow in them.
No, no.
So we were coming back, and Bob and I were walking the kids back from church one day. And Kelly was young. She was like in junior high. And we walked across the street, because we lived right across the street from the
Yeah.
So we walked back.
Yeah.
So we walked across the street. And her Sunday school teacher and her husband came pulling around out of the parking lot of the church and just and rolled down there and says, Kelly, we missed you today in Sunday school class. And Kelly goes like this.
Your sins will fight you.
I know. My sins will fight you.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that's funny.
Oh, yeah.
It was so perfect for God.
Perfect
to
example.
Give that
yep.
example.
I was like, well, yeah. Mom's right.
And I said, well, Kelly, what were you doing? So, well, Linda, a friend of hers, we were just running around the church in the basement, running around. We didn't feel like going to Sunday school. So, well, you got caught.
Yeah. That's cute. That's funny. And then it might be the same answer, but what advice would you give to the younger generations in regards to marriage, or what would you, even more so, like, what advice would you give to young kids when they're looking for a spouse? Like, what characteristics?
The one thing I would, first of all, I would love for them to become friends before they become boyfriend and girlfriend.
Yeah.
Also, I would pray that they would choose a spouse that had faith, that mm-hmm. were Christian.
Yeah.
You know, I think when you become unequally yoked, you can have trouble. You know, Bob and I were unequally yoked when we first got married.
Yeah.
And so that would be my encouragement to the younger people, is to pray about who you're going to marry. Ask mm-hmm. God to show you. Mm-hmm. You know, do premarital counseling, because we did a lot of premarital counseling. There was a lot of red flags on a lot of people, and we said, you really shouldn't be getting married until you
have these,
until you deal with the red flags that we see here.
Yeah.
And a lot of them didn't, but a lot of them did, and they ended up in divorce. Mm-hmm. So it's just a matter of communicating what you want, and, you know, and I would say to hold, keep yourself pure till you get married.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in today's age, that's very unusual for people to do that.
Yeah.
But you can do it. My grandkids have, and you can do that.
Yeah.
So, that's what I would encourage them, is to pray about it. Make sure you're equally yoked if you're a Christian, make sure you're equally yoked with another Christian.
Yeah.
And communicate what you want in your marriage.
Yeah.
You know, do you want kids? Do you not want kids? Do you, all those questions.
Yeah.
And to get premarital counseling before you get married.
Yeah. Okay. And so you already said that you had three kids.
I have three kids.
Yeah.
Mike, Mark, and Kelly.
Yep. And
then I have two stepsons.
Yes.
Scott and Greg.
Uh-huh.
From Jim's kids.
Marriage with Joe, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How old were you when you had your three kids?
I was 19 when I had Mike.
Okay.
I was 21 when I had Mark. Uh-huh. I was 27 when I had Kelly.
All right. And do you remember the story of each of their births?
Oh, yeah.
You want to tell them?
Michael's birth was, came, of course, I was so young.
Yeah.
I didn't really know anything. So his birth, he came, all three of my kids came very fast.
Okay.
Thank the Lord.
Yeah, that's lucky.
Yeah. And I remember going to the hospital, and he was born at St. Vincent's. No, he was born at Methodist. Going to Methodist, and I remember sitting on the, I was having contractions, and Bob says, come on, we need to get in. I said, wait a minute, I got to sit down. I remember sitting on a cement wall, and I said, I don't know if I can make it in there. So yes, you can. So we got in there, and it was, his birth was very, very fast. And I was so excited that it was a boy. I wanted boys.
Yeah, well, you had all brothers. Yeah.
And I remember I wanted to breastfeed, and I was trying to get Mike to, you know, attach to the breast, and I couldn't. So I said, so the nurse came and said, well, what's going on here? And I said, well, I need help. Well, you just put him up here. And she was so rude to me that I started crying. I said, could you just bring me a bottle? And I never breastfed anybody.
Yeah, well, that's kind of traumatizing.
It was. I was traumatized.
I was like, I've never done this before.
Oh, my gosh. And then they came in and bound me, and oh, my gosh, it was so painful.
Oh,
because my milk had already come in.
Yeah.
It was terrible. So that wasn't a good experience. But I was thrilled that Mike was a boy.
Uh-huh.
And then with Mark, he came. I remember being at the house and saying to Bob, hey, he was at work, and I called him. I said, I think you better come home. I think I'm
going to have it. You know. Yeah.
And I said, I had Mike fast. We better get to the hospital. So he said, well, give me time to go to the bank. And I said, well, I don't know if we'll have time to go to the bank.
Yeah.
So we get in the car, and I feel like I'm going to start pushing.
Yeah.
And I said, I feel like I'm going to start pushing. He said, I've got to go to the bank. Like, I have no money. I got to go to the bank. So he runs in the bank. He says, my wife's out of the car. Baby, I need to get some money. He gets money, comes out, goes. We get to St. Vincent's, and they literally. I got there. Mark was probably born 5-10 minutes after I got there.
That's crazy.
That's how quick it came.
Oh my goodness!
And I was so happy he was born. And then we weren't planning on Kelly. And then 7 years later, we went on a camping trip, and I always told. Don't Kelly, she was conceived under the stars. And I knew the minute, I'm telling you, I knew I was pregnant that night.
You did?
I just knew I was. I thought, I just know I am. And then I was hoping for a girl.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have a girl. Because there was 7 years difference between.
Yeah, and it's fun to have at least one of. Yeah. Yeah.
So, and she came very fast too.
Yeah. That's very lucky.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people don't have that experience. do you have any particularly funny parenting stories from when they were little? I'm sure you do, but
probably.
Any that stand out to you?
Let me think. Well, you know, I don't know it's necessarily funny. I know with Michael was more active as a child than Mark was. I mean, they were both active.
Yeah.
But I could take Mark anywhere with me and sit him to my side and visit with a friend for an hour, and he would never move. He would just sit there and you know, play. Where Mike, I would take Mike, and he would just, and so, and same with Kelly.
What lesson did you stress the most to your kids when they were little, like growing up?
Probably that family was very important.
Uh-huh.
And also that it's easier to tell the truth than it is to tell a lie.
Yeah, she said that. What is the most rewarding part about being a parent?
Watching God's hand upon their lives and his grace that covered our family for those 5 years that Bob was drinking. Just the grace of redemption, you know, of the, just watching the kids see their mom and dad go through a hard time and come out on the other side of it.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was, you'd have asked that, but I'm sure that was a lesson for them.
Yeah.
That, you know, you can do that with the Lord.
Yeah.
But just watching how God has gifted them, each one of them, in so many special ways spiritually, and how he is using them for the kingdom, all three of them. And it's what grace.
Yeah.
What grace.
Uh-huh. And do you have any parenting advice?
I would say to love your children unconditionally, to let them take risks, to be a safe place for them. That's one thing I tried to be with Mike, Mark, and Kelly. I tried to be a safe place for them, where they could come if they needed to talk. And I think I was.
Yeah.
I think they would say I was.
Yeah.
But that's what I would, mainly to be a safe place for your kids.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, don't compromise teaching obedience.
Yeah.
You know, obedience should come before being a friend with your kids. Mm-hmm. You know, they're raising adults, they're not raising kids.
Yeah.
So I would just say, just love them well. Uh-huh. Teach them what family is about.
Yeah.
And be a safe place for them.
Yeah. Love it. Can you talk a little bit about watching your kids go through major life events, like growing older, going to college, getting married? What were those major transitions like for you as a mom?
For a mom, I remember when Michael especially went to school, I literally walked by his room every day and cried.
Oh, yeah.
When he went to college. Yeah. I just thought of a funny story.
Okay, perfect.
I'm going to go tell this funny story now that I've got it in my mind.
Yeah, do it.
Because it has to do with Michael. Kelly, you know, when she was growing up, she was in the era where you had the big hair, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Hairspray.
Uh-huh.
Well, her and Mike shared a bathroom.
Yeah.
And but Kelly would go in and, you know, get in the shower, take a shower, and then she would spray her hair all over the place.
Uh-huh.
And Mike would go in and take a shower, and his feet would stick to the ground, and all the hairspray, you know.
Yeah.
Or she would go in and wear one of his sweaters or something, and it would have women's perfume on it.
Yeah. You know?
But that was, Mike would say, would you tell her not to spray her hair in the bathroom? But we laughed about that to this day.
That's funny.
Him walking into the bathroom.
His feet sticking to the floor.
Because of all of her hairspray. Okay, I'm sorry. Back to where
no,
we were.
No, you're fine. That's great. I love it.
What was that one thing?
You were talking about walking past Mike's room when he was going to college.
Oh, yeah.
And so just those transitions,
yeah,
as a parent.
That was really hard. It was hard with all the kids.
Yeah.
I think it's okay for me to say that. I don't think Kelly be mad if she hears this. Kelly, I never worried about my boys.
Yeah.
They had both, and Kelly did too. They all had good heads on the shoulder.
Yeah.
But Kelly had one feet in the world and one feet in the Lord.
Yeah.
And so when she went off to school, I said, okay, God, she is yours. I don't know what kind of decision she's going to be making in college. But she is yours, and you're just going to have to take her.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm going to hold my breath, trusting that you're going to not let her get in any trouble that she's going to be sorry for.
Yeah.
So, and he answered those prayers. But anyways, I remember she broke up with a guy that she really cared for, but she broke up because they were unequally yoked.
Yeah.
Came home and went over and went to a youth group that same weekend. She came home for a break, went to a youth group that same weekend, and God just literally took a hold of her and just turned her around. Just at that, you know, and she didn't even want to go. She said, I don't want to go. I don't know anybody. I said, yes, there's still people there that you know. No, I don't want to go. But she went, and she just fell into a great group of kids there, went on a retreat the following weekend, and God just really turned her around 180 degrees.
Oh, wow. What a blessing.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember she met her husband there, Tony, there. And a funny story about that, when they got married, Kelly could hear somebody crying.
Uh-huh.
That was standing up with him. And she said, who in the world was crying? And it was Mark. He was so happy that she married a Christian man. Because Mike and Mark and all of us were praying that she would, you know, turn the corner.
Yeah.
And, but isn't that just so sweet?
That's so dear, sweet. You know? Oh, I love that.
And I know that Kelly said the one thing that turned her back to the Lord is her brother Mike said to her, Kelly, I love you no matter what you do. I want you to know that I love you no matter what you do. I just would like for you to, you know, find the Lord in a personal way.
Yeah.
But he said, but I love you no matter what. And she said that meant so much to her when he said that to her.
Yeah.
But that was part of her transitioning in that 2 weeks that she was home.
Wow. So that's powerful.
Yeah. Powerful. So awesome.
Yeah. That's
God is so good.
Oh, yeah. What would the Kathy of today tell herself as a young wife and mother? Something you didn't know then, but you know now, and you wish you could
I wish that I would have known that God's ways was not my ways.
Yeah.
Through the troubled time in my first marriage.
Yeah.
That his ways are different, but they're always the best. And I wish I would have known the Lord in a personal way when I got married. I wish Bob would have known the Lord in a personal way when we first got married. I'm sure it would have been different.
Yeah.
For his drinking issue for those years. But you know what? God is always writing our stories. And that's my story. And he's been writing it from the time I was born.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't say that my mistakes were for naught, because they're not. Because it's brought me into a saving knowledge with Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives me a hope and a yearning to be home with the Lord. And also that I'm going to be able to see my mom and dad again, and Bob and Jim, and my good friends that have died before me.
Uh-huh.
So, but that's how I would answer that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a great answer. Chills. So you have 14 grandkids?
Yeah.
Could you name them?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I'll go by the David, Aaron, Katie, and Emmy, Mark, Jacob, Taylor, Tyler, Blake, and Ethan, and then my, from Jim's family, there's Ivy, Jill, Sean, and Ann.
Okay. Wow. And what's your favorite part about being a grandma?
Oh, just loving on those kids.
Uh-huh.
I just... You know, I don't know if you saw the candy jars when you walked in.
Oh, I see them now.
But that's my grandkids' corner.
Oh.
So I am very intentional about making memories for my grandkids.
Uh-huh.
And always have been. That's one thing I always wanted to do. I wanted this home to be a safe place for them.
Uh-huh.
And it has proven to be that. They come over from the time they were in junior high, all the way through high school, and even after some married, they come over and spend the night in my basement.
It's so fun. I love that.
And, you know, they will always remember. I made those candy jars because I want them to remember when I pass. Do you remember Grandma's
candy? Yeah.
She always had a candy for us, and, you know, candy jars filled with candy for us. I just love making memories. I've stood on my head at a very old age. To show them
just that you
grandma can do
have
that.
A fun time. Yeah.
Went to Austria. Jim and I went to Austria one time and went to be over with Mike and Patty and the kids. And we went on, after the conference that we served at, we went to Croatia for vacation.
Yeah.
And there's, I think it's the Adriatic Sea, I think it was. Anyways,
okay.
We were in this area and there was a tall diving board.
Uh-huh.
And I do not like heights.
And
my grandkids over there, Mark and Taylor and Jay call me Oma because it's German.
Uh-huh.
They lived there for 18 years. Well, they didn't. Mike and Patty did, but the kids lived there until they came back home.
Yeah.
And so they says, come on, Oma, come on up and jump over this. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. And they said, come on. And then I thought, you know what? You're all about making memories, Kathy.
Go
and jump off.
Yeah.
So I climbed up this big ladder, you know, it's like probably 30 feet off the...
Yeah.
And just literally walked off, not looked down, just walked off. That and the sea was so cold, it was freezing.
Oh.
But I made the memory for it, and they will always remember
that. They'll always talk about it,
So I try to make memories with all the kids.
Yeah.
I've taken Blake out to Eagle Creek when he was really young.
Uh-huh.
Walks, just to have one-on-one time with him.
Yeah.
And, of course, with Tyler.
Yeah.
I've got so many memories with Tyler, caring for him when he was ill. And boy, talk about 5 years apart of time. That was hard.
Yeah. Since you did bring that up, what was that 5 years like?
Unreal. We thought for sure the first diagnosis that he was healed. He went into remission for a while, and then it came back, and it just kept coming back and coming back. And But I was, you know, I would be at the hospital. His hospital stays were always throughout the whole weekend, Friday yeah. through Sunday. And I would go down and be with Kelly because Tony had to work. And I would go down and stay all night with them at the hospital. And, you know, just, I guess I could say that if it wasn't for the Lord and for what he has done with Tyler's story.
Yeah.
It's just been unbelievable. And Tyler's, he had a love for the Lord, and God gave him a platform.
Yeah.
And he used it.
Yeah.
I remember one time, this was close to the end of his life. He was, Kelly was changing his bandage on his backside, and he had him roll over, and I was sitting on a couch, and I had his head in my hand, because he was so heavy to lift.
Yeah.
Because he was like dead weight. So she would roll him over and she would be working on his backside and I would have his head in my hand and I would say, I remember one day I said, Tyler, how you doing? He says, Grandma, I'm hanging on the edge of glory. And I looked over at Kelly, we just both just started crying.
Yeah.
You know, he just, both, and he and Jim had a really, you know, because Jim was diagnosed with cancer.
The same time,
shortly after, and they had a special relationship, and you know, they just really, they both knew that they won either way, whether they're going to be here or there in heaven, but they won the race. Yeah. But for Tyler, it was hard to watch, but I think God has used his life more in death than he had in life, and I think he will continue to do that.
Yeah.
So that brings me joy, mm-hmm. that God is using his passion for, Tyler's passion for research yeah. and for the Lord.
Yeah.
That he will continue to use it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What the Lord is doing through
It's unbelievable.
The story.
I know,
yes.
It is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God is going to, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. God's ways are not our way. I would have never, you know, and Kelly would give this all up, and so would Tony,
yeah.
if they had their son back.
Yes.
But God's ways are not our ways, and we don't know how he's going to use our struggles in our lives,
yeah.
our hardships, but he will use them,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's for his glory.
Yeah.
It's not about us, it's about him.
Yeah.
And if we can kind of own that when we go through struggles, that, what do you want to teach me, Lord? What do you want to teach me in this?
Yeah.
How can I glorify you?
Yeah.
You know, what, you know, how are you going to use this in my life? What are you going to teach me?
Mm-hmm.
Asking those questions when you're going through struggles or trials or
yeah.
whatever. Because we all are going to go through them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And the thing is, God loves us so much, he wants to use those struggles
yeah.
to bring us closer and to know who we are in Christ mm-hmm. and to know him more than we know ourselves.
Oh, so good. Chills. My mom actually has said before, she was in a Bible study and a woman said something, and I just always think about it, but the woman was like, you know, this sounds crazy, but I'm sometimes a little envious of someone going through a hard time because the amount of growth and
that's where your growth comes
in relation, like your relationship with Christ mm-hmm. is just.
You know, and we were at my life group last night. We were talking about, we were doing a thing on a study on Rooted, and it's about suffering. Our last chapter was on suffering, and. I was saying, you know, I think, and he said, well, yeah, but when we're doing, everything's going fine, we're, you know, we're not that close. And I said, but I think God gives us rest periods when things do go fine.
Yeah.
Because he knows that there's going to be a valley that we're going
yes.
to hit. And then he gives us another rest period. Then there's going to be another valley.
Yeah.
And I think that that is so true.
Yeah.
You know, it's how we grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard. And we don't want to.
But yeah. yeah.
I do want to say, I don't know if you're going to ask this question or not, but I am so blessed and that my kids married godly two women and a godly man.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't ask anybody better for Mike. I couldn't ask than Patty. I couldn't ask anybody better for Mark than Karen. And I couldn't ask anybody better for Kelly than Tony.
Yeah.
And I just, it's interesting to watch their families, how they grow, how they interact. It's just, it's a blessing.
Yeah.
But I wanted to say that I love them all dearly.
Well, I appreciate that you did. They'll appreciate that too.
They love me very well, by the way. And my grandkids, like, you know, every one of my grandkids texted me today.
Oh.
And said, hey, we're praying for you while you do your interview. And, you know, it blows me away. I am loved so well, not only by my family, but I have a life group that loves me well.
Uh-huh.
You know, Mark said at Jim's funeral, he said, Mom, I'm not going to worry about you not being cared for between your family and this congregation of people who love you, will take very good care of you. And that congregation took that to heart. There's not a time that I go out to dinner with them, my life group, that they don't pay for my dinner. You know, they're always doing something for me.
Yeah.
As well as my family.
Uh-huh.
But, and those are what have got me through two deaths.
Yeah.
It's my family and friends.
Mm-hmm.
What, and also through Tyler's death.
Yeah. Such a blessing to mm-hmm. have such a community yeah. of people yeah. that genuinely care.
And I don't know how people do it without it. I really don't.
I don't either. I don't know how people go through it without that and without a faith.
Yeah, yeah. I know.
It's like, every time there's something even bad going on in the world, it's like, I just feel so bad for the people who don't have anything to hope for.
Exactly.
I don't know how, because it's hard to do it with it.
Right.
So without it.
Yeah. I know.
I
just don't know how.
I don't either.
Well, they usually do it with booze or...
Yeah, they go to the world.
Some kind of an addiction.
Yeah.
Is how they cope.
Yeah. So your granddaughter lived with you for a year? Talk to me about that.
Yes. She was over in China for a year. And when she was coming back, she called and asked if she could come and live with me. It was shortly after Jim had died, uh-huh. and she thought it would be good, I'm sure. And I said, yeah, I love it. So she came and she lived for me for a year, and we just had it. She's a really good cook. She taught me how to eat things that I never ate before. But she's a sweetheart. But she, and she's moving back in with me.
She is?
In March 2nd through until she gets married on May 19th. Her and Joseph are just bought a home, and his lease ends at the end of February, so he will move into the home.
Uh-huh.
She's living there now because her lease ended at the end of. I meant. Maybe she's not moving in. His lease ends at the end of February, so he's moving in. She's moving over. They're not going to live together.
Yeah.
But she's moving over here until she gets married.
Oh,
so I get to have
how
her again
special.
For her. I know, I can't wait. Oh, and another thing I needed to say while I'm thinking about this.
It's okay.
My kids got me for Christmas. I'm just so overwhelmed about this. Not only am I overwhelmed with what my grandkids did with this podcast, but I'm overwhelmed. My kids gave me a trip to, this has been on my bucket list for years. It was on Jim's on my bucket list, but we never got to fulfill it because he got sick. They're taking me to Hawaii.
Oh, when?
In April. So
that's so exciting.
Isn't that awesome? So I'm going to Hawaii and off with Kelly and Tony, Mike and Patty, and Mark and Karen.
Oh,
won't that just be so?
That's gonna be
so overwhelmed.
That's such a special trip with just your
know,
kids and their spouses.
Yeah,
oh.
I'm just so overwhelmed with it all. I'm telling you, my family loves me well.
Yeah,
they really care for me, and I just can't tell you how blessed I am. And how I feel so sad for people that aren't, that don't have families that love them
mm-hmm.
and care for them.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah. No, what you just said, that's all you could ever hope for in life.
Yes.
Yeah. Is to.
Yeah.
At the end, like in your older years, knowing that you are loved.
I know.
And, yeah.
And I feel, you know, because my time is short. You know, I know that. You know, I don't know how long I'll live, but I would like to live maybe another 10 years.
Well,
whether I will or not, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, so I just, my kids know that I'm very family. So they're, you know, Mike and Patty are always inviting me to the lake. Mark and Karen are always inviting me to the lake. They let me have my friends to the lake. You know,
fun.
You know, Kelly and Tony have a place in Florida. They invite me to Florida.
Uh-huh.
I just have three biological, very blessed kids mm-hmm. who love me well.
Yeah.
And I thank Jesus for that.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Mic drop. Well, you've done great. We're in the last section of questions now. So, as you look back on your life, who are the people who have influenced you or impacted you the most?
Probably the people that influenced me the most was my mom and dad. Mm-hmm. Just because they showed me what a loving relationship looks like and gave me a longing to have that kind of a relationship. They were great grandparents, so they gave me an example of that. I have friends, my life group have been great mentors along the way. Of course, I'm the old lady in the group. Jim and I were asked to be in this life group. They're all young. They're 50 and down.
Yeah.
Well, they're once, no, three of them are turning 60 this year.
Okay.
They're 60 and down, but we were the old, they wanted somebody that had some experience.
Some people who were wise. Yeah. Yeah.
But they, you know, but they don't look at me as old. They look at me as their mother. But anyway, I just have great friends. And my three kids have impacted me greatly. Jim's kids have impacted me.
Uh-huh. Your family and your friends, basically.
Yeah. Basically, yeah. I'm all about family.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Oh, I got to tell you a story about Sweet Pea.
Okay, yeah. Keep going.
When Jim, 2 days before Jim died.
Yeah.
I had him here in the garden room. We had him at home in hospice. And I came out in the morning before the nurse got here, and his eyes were open. They hadn't been open for a day or two. And his eyes were wide open. I walked up to him, and I said, "Well, good morning, Sweet Pea. How are you doing?" And I've never called him Sweet Pea in my life.
Yeah.
I've called him honey, yeah. Sweetheart, yeah. But never Sweet Pea. I said, "Well, good morning, Sweet Pea. How are you doing?" And he looked at me and says, "Kathy, I love you so much." And he closed his eyes. Didn't open again the rest of the day. The next morning, the nurse and I were bathing his back. We switched him over on the side, and his eyes popped open. And went down. I said, "Well, good morning, Jim." I know. I said, "Good morning, Sweet Pea. Can you pucker up and give me a kiss?" And he went. And I kissed him. He closed his eyes, and he died that evening. So when I bought this cat, I thought, what can I name this cat? And I thought, you know what? I'm going to name it Sweet Pea, because God gave me those two precious moments with Jim before he died.
Yeah.
And so every time I say Sweet Pea to Sweet Pea, I'm saying Jim.
I love that. Gave me chills. Yeah. That's such a cute story.
I know. So I wanted to, I thought about that. I thought I need to share that.
No, that's good. Yeah. That's good. Do you have a favorite memory or time period of your life?
Let's see. Well, there's, of course, the lake was always my, you know, was one of my favorite times as a child. Mm-hmm. There was a time when, this is when Bob was drinking, that I took up tennis.
Oh, I love tennis.
And came fairly good at it.
Yeah.
Not anymore, but at that time, because it was my
outlet. Therapy. Yeah.
It was my outlet. And which brought Mike into playing tennis, and he went to scholarship on tennis.
Oh,
scholarship.
Where did he go?
He started out at Vincennes, and he went to IUPUI, and then he got his doctorate at Emmanuel.
Okay.
I think it was Emmanuel.
Awesome. That's...
If I'm wrong, Mike, I'm sorry. But he's got a master's. He did very well.
Yeah. So that's your time playing tennis.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I loved it. I mean, it was just because I'm very competitive.
Yeah. Well, your upbringing with your brothers.
Yeah, I'm very competitive. Now I play pickleball when I don't have something wrong with my
Yeah, what
body.
Happened? What happened to your hand?
I have Dupuytren's disease, which is where ropes develop in your hands and they pull your hands down.
Oh man.
This hand, I've already had this hand done, but see, I'm sort of developing ropes. You can see them. You can feel them. And so I just sit when I watch TV, and I just constantly stretch my hands like this. But this finger was like this. And so they straightened it.
Oh, man. Well, so, no pickleball for right now.
No pickleball for now.
Man. Okay. What do you feel is your greatest accomplishment?
I think raising my family.
Yeah.
And being a grandmother to 14 grandkids, and now a great-grandma to, well, we're up to 14 now.
14 great, too? Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
Four years and under. All my kids got married at the same time, so now they're all having babies at the same time.
Yes, yeah.
So that's just been such a, you know, and I would have never thought I would have seen great-grandkids.
Yeah, what a blessing that is.
I know, and now I have 14, and there's more on the way.
Well, that's what's great about having kids so young, too.
Yeah.
For you.
Yeah, I'm so glad I married young.
Yeah, my parents had me when they were 19, mm-hmm. and they talk about that all the time. They're like, well.
Yeah.
God willing, but.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, and it's, I've, you know, I really kind of grew up with my kids. Really.
Yes, which is.
And it's been fun.
Yeah.
You know, I've just got great kids. That's all there is to
yeah.
it. And I have great grandkids.
Yeah.
You know, like Lindsay. Lindsay's so sweet. I know that she called all those grandkids and said, hey, do an interview.
Yes.
Give her an encouraging word, you know. Aww. She is just, David was my first grandchild.
Okay.
And Ethan is my last grandchild.
Uh-huh.
But Shepherd is my first great-grandchild. David's oldest son is my... So I have my oldest grandson is David. My oldest great-grandson is Shepherd, who is his son.
Oh, how special.
I think it's so special.
That's very special. Yeah. Yeah. I do want to ask, do you remember the moment you found out you were going to be a grandma?
Yes, I do. Let me think.
And if you don't remember, but like... How did you react, I guess?
Oh, I was so excited. I was beside myself. I was just beside myself. I was so excited. I think Mark and Karen gave a note first about, they told us in a way that we had to read, and I thought, what? You know.
Uh-huh.
But I forget exactly how it went. It's been so long ago.
Oh, well, that's like.
And then Mike and Patty did the same thing, and so did Mark. I got to see all of Kelly's kids being born.
Oh, that's special.
And I got to see, talk about a funny story there. They wanted me to tape, you know, to videotape. And so I'm videotaping. I don't know if it was one. It was one of them. I don't know which one. I was like, oh, isn't he just so cute? He's just so cute. And all the video it has nothing of the baby. It has the wall.
Oh, no.
And I thought, oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry.
And it's just you talking. So cute.
Oh, he's so cute. Oh, isn't he just darling?
It's not.
Kelly and Tony about died.
That's something my grandma would have too,
probably. Don't give her a video camera.
No.
She doesn't know how to use it.
That's hilarious. I love it.
Oh, gosh. And I also want to say about my brothers. I want to say something about my brothers.
Yeah.
We still meet every couple months and have lunch together.
Are they all still living?
They're all still living. They all still live in Indianapolis.
That's a blessing too.
Which is, so I have been very blessed all my life.
Yeah.
With a good family and that have loved me well.
Uh-huh.
And I pray that I have loved everybody well.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you have after hearing, meeting you. Do you regret anything?
I regret really, I regret that I didn't, pay more attention at school.
Okay.
You know, I was so social. And the thing is, I'm not an extrovert. Everybody thinks I am. I'm an introvert.
You're an introvert.
But I'm close to to the line of extrovert.
You're probably an introverted extrovert. Like,
yeah.
You'd rather, yeah.
All my kids are introverts. Bob was an introvert. Jim was, I would say he was an extrovert. He says he was an introvert. And I said, no, you're not. You're an extrovert. But the older I get, the more introvert I get.
Yeah. Which makes sense, I feel like. Yeah.
And, but I regret not taking school more seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't like school.
Not for everyone.
I didn't make good grades, and I just, you know, school was hard for me. But I wish it was, I wish it hadn't. And I wish I would have also learned a second language.
Yeah.
And I tell my kids.
That's a good one.
I tell my kids, you can learn. I say, heck, I can't even speak English. Let alone a second language. But that would have been fun to be able to do that.
Oh, yeah. I think I might need to just do that. Because I think that's all the time. I'm like, I didn't really pay attention. And I took French. But I didn't do great at it because it's like, oh, whatever. And even now, I'm like, I wish.
Yeah. I just, you know, it just so well, like when you go to Europe, they all speak 4 and 5 languages.
Yes.
Over there.
Yeah.
And, you know, my grandkids, Mark, Jacob, and Taylor, they all speak German fluently.
Oh, that's awesome.
Especially Mark. He's the oldest. Anyways, I just got great grandkids.
Yeah. I love it. What advice would you give to my generation?
I would say don't compromise your faith, because we're in a time where it would be easy to do that.
Yeah.
But don't. Stand firm on the scriptures and what you believe. For those who do not know the Lord, I would just encourage them to find hope in Him. Mm-hmm. You know, I've said to the Lord, you know, it really concerns me, my grandkids and my great, especially my great grandkids now, growing up in this world the way it is. And He said, I have made them in my image, and I will care for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what they go through, I'm going to be with them. But that's hard, because this world is just going to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah.
But anyway, I would just encourage this generation to seek the Lord, mm-hmm. faith.
Yeah.
And if you are a Christian, to stay firm in your faith, stand mm-hmm. on it. Don't compromise with the world.
Mm-hmm.
Don't compromise with your peers. And it's easy to do, especially in a secular work field. If you're a Christian, you're in a secular work. It's easy to pick up habits.
Yeah.
You know, speaking habits, all kinds of stuff,
mm-hmm.
being in the secular world.
Mm-hmm.
But just be intentional of praying through your day that you don't do that.
Yeah. And I feel like this might go hand in hand for you. But what do you believe is the most important thing in life?
To know the Lord Jesus Christ.
Yep.
And then the next family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do. I just think, I like what you said earlier, I don't know how people go through trials and tribulations without knowing that there's a hope on the other side of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really don't.
I don't.
I think about that so much.
Yeah.
Especially, like you said, the way the world is now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, last question, unless there's something else that you want to talk about, but what do you hope to be remembered by?
I hope that I'm remembered that I was a good mother, a good grandparent, and a good great-grandparent, and that I love my family well. And that I walked with my Lord. And just that I love people and I love my family well.
Yeah.
That's what I want to be remembered by.
Mm-hmm. That was great. You are very wise. I see why Lindsay wanted me to interview you. Thank you for sharing all of that.
Yeah.
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 Your faith is such a testament to like the way that you've handled the situations in your life.
Well, you know, again, it goes back to, again, how do people do it without it? I don't know. I would have never, you would have buried me a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But then that is something that I struggle with too, just thinking like, how do you help those people? Because like, you can spread the gospel, but it's hard to think like God has to be it's an individual decision. Yeah.
Well, I think the best way to spread the gospel is how you walk your walk.
Yeah.
You know, there are times when you don't have to say a thing, but people are always looking at you. And, you know, I try to keep that in my foremost of my mind, that people are always, when I'm out at the grocery store or wherever, people are always looking.
Mm-hmm.
And I want them to see somebody that doesn't yell at the
cashier. Yeah.
You know, I think that our walk speaks a lot, brings a lot more people to Christ a lot of times than our talk does.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we need to do, we need to share the gospel. But I think in times when you don't know how to do that, then show them how you walk your walk.
Yeah.
you know, mm-hmm. show them, you know, I think our stories is what brings people to Christ. You know, people think when you go through something, you think that you're the only person dealing with this. And you come to find out there's a lot of people dealing yeah. with this.
That's why bringing it to the light is
bringing
so...
Bringing it to the light and how you got through it, through the Lord, mm-hmm. is a testimony mm-hmm. to... That's why God says, don't waste your sorrows. You know, don't... I'm going to use what I take you through for someone else.
Yeah. Wow. That was good. That was really good. I just keep saying you're really good. Joyful, faithful, inspirational. Kathy has lived a life where she has sought out to make memories, from the candy jar she leaves for her grandkids to jumping off a 30-foot ledge into the sea. Kathy loves her people well and reminds that God is always writing our stories. After living through so much loss through her years, Kathy always seems to find a way to let the light in, trusting the Lord and His plan for her life. Kathy's greatest accomplishment, she says, is raising her family, and she hopes to leave a legacy of what it means to walk with the Lord. If this short interview is any indication, I'd say Kathy will leave this legacy for everyone she has encountered.
Since COVID, I tell you, COVID just ruined me.
Yeah.
Since COVID, I watch a lot of series.
Hey.
On Netflix.
No shame. I same way. What series do you like?
I like all kinds. I like all kinds of series. I like Yellowstone.
I love Yellowstone.
1883 or whatever.
Yeah.
I like mysteries. I like all,
all of it. Yeah.
You just put some on there. Uh huh. But mainly, I get in the morning, sweet pea. But anyway, getting up and taking care of her, you know, getting breakfast if I eat breakfast. No, I don't always eat breakfast. And then if I have errands, I bring them in the morning. Uh-huh. I watch something on Netflix or I watch tennis. I'm a big tennis person.
Oh yeah.
So I watch all the majors.
Oh yeah.
So I watch that a lot. And then in the evening, I either, you know, my son Mike meets with me every 2 weeks since Jim's dying, just to make sure that I'm doing okay.
That's so sweet.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
And, but I, you know, sometimes I go out to market again, sometimes I go to market parties, Kelly and Tony's, to go out with friends.
Yeah. Keep yourself busy.
Yeah, I just keep myself busy.
Yeah.
So that's basically what my day is like. Yeah. I spend time in the morning with Lord.
Yeah. First fruits. Well, this is great. Thank you so much.